You're listening to KIXI Seattle 91. It's 10 o'clock news time.
CBS News. Success in San Francisco Bay, where 44 people have been rescued safely from a fishing boat that ran aground on rocks under the Golden Gate Bridge. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. It's believed at this point that heavy winds and the treacherous tides of the Golden Gate Narrows sent the fishing boat Argo onto the jagged rocks under the bridge. A fog bank rolling in made the rescue difficult as crashing tides threatened to break up the boat as it lay impaled by the rocks. U.S. Coast Guard spokesman Larry Clark told CBS News both boats and helicopters were needed to overcome the elements and save the people.
Coast Guard patrol boats went on scene. They tried to evacuate the people from boat to boat, but at first the seas were a little too rough. San Francisco Fire Department responded, and we coordinated the rigging of a line from the shore to the boat about 30 yards offshore. About four or so people were transferred by this line from the Argo to shore. A helicopter hoisted one load of people, that'd be probably two or three people, and the Coast Guard patrol boats, when the seas died down a little bit, were able to get in there and transfer the rest of the people from the boat.
Clark says the Coast Guard has placed pumps aboard the 60-foot fishing boat, and more will be brought aboard in an effort to keep it from foundering. CBS News continues following this message.
For the graying skies, for the withering of the tree. Are you to blame for the vanished bird, for the stars you cannot see? Are you to blame for the bitter scent that hovers in the air? Are you to blame? Am I to blame for the air no longer there?
True, isn't it? We've all had a share when it comes to polluting the air. Your Lung Association believes that alert citizen action can reverse the process of pollution.
Join with your Lung Association in the fight against air pollution. It's a matter of life and breath.
Arab League sponsors of the latest ceasefire in Lebanon still express optimism that the civil war can be halted once an enlarged Arab peacekeeping force takes up buffer zone positions. Reinforcements, which were to have arrived this weekend, have been delayed, however, and reports from Lebanon point to increasingly heavy fighting spreading from Beirut to the countryside. Israelis got involved in a naval action off the Lebanese port of Sidon, but there are two versions of just what happened. A Jerusalem communique says Israeli warships sank a boat carrying Palestinian guerrillas and captured two others in international waters. But the Egyptian Wafa news agency quotes Palestinian sources as reporting an Israeli ship sunk after it allegedly went to the aid of Christian boats trying to intercept a freighter pulling into Sidon. The United States has received new Syrian assurances that Palestinian activities will be controlled in southern Lebanon. Those assurances, involving the zone near the Israeli border, may be a major topic of conversation when the Israeli cabinet meets Sunday. More from CBS News diplomatic correspondent Marvin Kalb in Washington.
Syria has conveyed private assurances to the United States that it will tightly control the flow of Palestinian troops and supplies into southern Lebanon, thus sharply reducing the Palestinian ability to launch guerrilla raids against Israel. Syria also told the U.S. that with Lebanon now more or less under its control, President Assad is once again interested in exploring a comprehensive settlement with Israel. At the recent meetings of Arab leaders in Riyadh and Cairo, a shaky ceasefire was arranged for Lebanon, leaving more than 20,000 Syrian troops in a dominating position, but allowing the Palestinians to return to southern Lebanon. Syria, which controls access through the Bekaa Valley, then began letting Palestinian units back into what used to be called Fatah land. The Israelis braced for trouble, but nothing dramatic happened. Because Syria's policy has been notoriously fickle in recent months, neither the U.S. nor Israel is counting on continued quiet. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, Washington.
Are you thinking about ordering some of your Christmas presents out of a mail order catalog this year? This is Gene King for the Council of Better Business Bureaus, and I've got some important information for you. Always read the mail order catalog carefully. And before you order anything, find out if the merchandise is offered on a satisfaction guaranteed or a money-back basis. check for any cutoff date for the offer you're interested in. And be sure to keep a copy of the ad or brochure from which you ordered, along with your canceled check when it's returned to you. Always pay by check or money order. Never send cash through the mail. And one final tip to keep in mind. A Federal Trade Commission rule requires that the mail order company you deal with must ship the merchandise to you within 30 days after it receives your order. And if that's not possible, the company must notify you of any delay and give you a chance of canceling or receiving a refund on your order.
The dig out from under hundreds of tons of mud begins in earnest Sunday in Trapani, Italy. Friday night floods killed at least 10 people in the Sicilian city. 8 others are listed as missing. The city's antiquated sewer system, slated for repair after a 1965 flood but still unimproved, couldn't handle the water. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
Seattle weather is calling for variable high clouds through Sunday. It'll be increasing clouds Sunday night and Monday. Slight chance of a little rain Monday. Lows in the mid-40s. Highs near 60 and north to northeast winds 5 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of measurable rain is 10%, 20% tomorrow and 30% tomorrow night. Downtown Seattle has 54 degrees. It's 55 at SeaTac Airport. We're standing by for the CBS Mystery Theater. Starring E.G. Marshall, we invite you to stay tuned. You're listening to KIXI Seattle 91. It's 10:07.
CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall. A story begins with an idea. It may be suggested by the imagination, or by an incident, or by a fact. And behind the idea, there is a thought. All of us have heard that the pen is mightier than the sword. A piece of writing can change the course of history by sending men into battle. The Declaration of Independence, for example. It is a piece of writing that strangely preoccupies George Monroe while at breakfast with his mother.
Who, Mother?
Butler. Silas Butler. I asked you if he isn't one of your correspondence school students. A promising writer, you said.
Yes, he is.
Well, his wife is dead from carbon monoxide poisoning. Here's the article in the morning paper.
How very odd. She's dead.
Our mystery drama, Your Grade is A, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Roy Windsor and stars Bob Caliban and Joan Shea. It is sponsored in part by Time Magazine and Buick Motor Division. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
The following is a test. Please answer all questions truthfully.
Question one. Which of these do you like most? Rowboat, dentist, or police Zuzu?
Question two. If you and three friends wanted to take a nice trip, would you take turns carrying each other, take turns throwing each other, or buy an Opel Isuzu?
Question three. Given a choice, would you attend a lecture on good posture, hurt your foot, or buy an Opel Isuzu?
If you answered Opel Isuzu to all three, see your Buick Opel dealer and take a test drive. Otherwise, see someone else.
The menacing echoes of Nazi evil reverberate to a crescendo of vicious conflict as brother kills brother. It happens in The Kane Conspiracy, a story of high-tension suspense told by one of the most widely read authors in the world, Simmel. Only Simmel could capture the violent truth of this intense struggle to restore Nazi terror. A struggle between two brothers who hate each other and love the same woman. Read Simmel's The Kane Conspiracy in paperback from Popular Library.
Okay, Marion, hand me the paddle.
But Teddy, that river looks so nasty.
Yeah, a bit rugged, all right. Nothing I can't handle, though.
Yeah, but you've never done this sort of thing before, and I think...
first time for everything, Marion. It takes a little guts.
Well, I just don't think you're doing...
Man needs a little excitement in his life, Marion. Good for the soul.
Howard won't like it if you bang up his canoe.
I won't. Now, give me a push. Easy.
Put your lights back.
Ah, stop it, Marion. I'm a grown man.
Teddy!
Later, baby!
Ted's off on a great adventure.
Geronimo!
While he may not survive. Not that it's foolish to shoot the rapids, just foolish for a complete novice like Ted. If you want a little excitement in your boating recreation, that's fine. But the American Red Cross urges you to protect yourself with knowledge, skill, and the proper safety equipment.
Whoa!
After all, why do it the hard way?
Many good correspondence schools with conscientious instructors to match. The student completes assignments and mails them in for criticism and encouragement. Silas Butler, who is 48, is one of many students whose writing efforts are carefully scrutinized by a young instructor named George Monroe. He does not know Butler personally, so the news of Mrs. Butler's death is to him only odd. But to her close friend, Judith Palmer, it is tragic and bitter.
Well, Kent?
Now, don't take that tone, dear. You'll have to pay Silas your respects. He's dazed by her death.
Well, he won't be for long.
That's unkind. Now, Silas knows how you feel about him. Let bygones be bygones. He's lost his wife.
He lost her a long time ago. I refuse to believe she took her own life. Oh, she had reason to wish to be dead, but Molly never would have done a thing like that, locking herself in the garage and starting up the car.
All right, if it makes you feel any better, say it was an accident. Now, it's 11 o'clock. I must get to work.
What did you and Silas talk about from 8 until now?
Not very much. I tried to console him, but, well, there isn't much to say in the face of a death.
Oh, poor Molly. Oh, it's so unreal.
Believe me, it is to him, too, and to me.
If the two of you hadn't been so buried in that chess game...
Oh, no, no. Our game had nothing to do with what happened.
Except to leave Molly with an empty evening. Where was she going, Kent? Did she say?
No. Silas and I were in the library. From the door, she said she was going for a ride, and she said goodnight to both of us.
When was that?
Oh, it's about 8 or so. At 9:30, Silas walked me to the driveway, and he noticed that his garage door was closed. It's a detached garage, as you know, 100 feet down the driveway. He seemed concerned. He asked me to walk with him to the garage.
And you found Molly on the cement floor?
Yes, after Si had shut off the car engine, and we let the carbon monoxide escape.
Oh.
It was a thick haze. And then we went in and dragged Molly into the fresh air.
If you dragged her out right away...
It wouldn't have done any good. Carbon monoxide can poison a person in less than 2 minutes. If the person who's trapped can't break a window or open a door, in 6 or 7 minutes, he or she is dead.
You know that for a fact?
Yes. I checked my medical dictionary late last night. As Silas's attorney, I had to inform myself on the subject.
Molly was smart enough to know about carbon monoxide. Why couldn't she have escaped?
Oh, because she didn't want to.
Oh.
You cling to your belief that it was an accident. Go ahead.
I have to, darling. I knew Molly.
Then why was the garage door shut? Why didn't she open the door?
Well, garage doors can stick. Ours does sometimes. That block that goes into the cement floor often won't budge. Oh, I've scuffed my shoe many times trying to release it. Now, something like that may have happened.
Then Molly would have tried to break a window.
But they're up high and small. Is there a regular door, a house door on the side of that garage like ours? You know, the one that opens into the storage space for garden supplies?
Well, I think there is, but we didn't check.
Oh.
We got Molly out, and Silas ran into the house to telephone their doctor. And after that, it was pretty hectic. The doctor, the police, an ambulance. It was quite awful.
Oh.
Zach was very kind to Silas.
Oh, I'd forgotten Zach was the police officer in charge. What does Zach think?
I don't know. It seemed obvious to all of us.
Well... It's not to me.
Oh, Judith, you can't deny the facts.
Yes, I can. Because what happened just wasn't in Molly Butler's character.
Please come in, Mrs. Palmer.
Yes. Mrs. Kent Palmer.
Yes, oh, let me close the door. It can be noisy around here.
Yes.
Please sit down.
Thank you. I'll come right to the point, Mr. Monroe. Silas Butler is a student of this correspondence school.
Yes, he is, but...
I don't expect that you'd know him personally.
Well, that's what I was going to say. The instructors never have a personal relationship with a student.
Well, Molly Butler was my best friend.
Oh. My mother read about her in this morning's newspaper. We were sorry to learn that she committed suicide.
I don't think she did.
Oh?
And that's why I wanted a confidential talk with you.
Well, I don't know Mr. Butler. I know he was married. That's on his biography, but that's all I know. But how does our school... I really have no idea what you're driving at.
I visited Mr. Butler late this morning to pay my respects. He asked me to go through his wife's personal things, clothes and so on, and to dispose of them as I saw fit.
Yes.
Well, among Molly Butler's effects was a diary. I glanced through it. Wasn't Mr. Butler writing a murder mystery story as one of his assignments?
I'd have to check over my file of critiques. May I ask why you're interested in Mr. Butler as a writer?
Well, I know that he was working on a murder mystery story. Molly Butler refers to it in her diary.
For heaven's sakes. Why?
Because the characters in the story and the story outline are taken straight from life.
Well, that's true of much of what is written. We encourage students to write about what they know from real experience.
I understand that, and it makes sense.
Well, then?
Molly had read her husband's story. It wasn't completed, and that's what had her frightened.
I really don't follow you, Mrs. Palmer.
Well, Mr. Butler's story about an ordinary, ambitious young man who marries a socially prominent girl. They have a son. The couple is happy together, and the mother thinks that the sun rises and sets on her son. And then he's killed.
And that poisons the marriage.
How did you know?
Well, I assumed that it did. After all, I am an instructor in writing. Unless one of the parents was to blame for the son's death, there wouldn't be any conflict, hence no story. How did the son die?
In an automobile accident. His father is driving him home from prep school, driving too fast and carelessly. The boy is killed. The father is injured, but recovers.
And the mother blames the father.
That's right. And that ended the relationship.
I see. The story you're telling me isn't a story at all, is that it?
That's it. It is the story of Silas and Molly Butler. And now Molly's dead. You're mentioned several times in Molly's diary, Mr. Monroe.
In what context?
Well, Mr. Butler had great respect for your encouragement and ideas. Had you exchanged thoughts about how the story ought to end?
I think so. This is very odd, Mrs. Palmer. I've never had an experience like this before.
Neither did Molly Butler. You see what I'm suggesting, Mr. Monroe?
It's too fantastic to believe.
Maybe, but I wish you'd think it over. I'm going to present it to my brother, Captain Zachary of the police department, to hear what he has to say.
Because you're not satisfied with how Mrs. Butler died?
No, I'm not. She was a very close friend. She's dead now. I owe it to her to find out how she died.
Thank you for seeing me, Captain Zachary.
Glad to. Come in, come in.
Thank you.
Sit down. My sister's already been here.
Well, what do you think, Captain?
Well, she's got a lively imagination, Mr. Monroe.
Then you don't think there's anything to it?
To what? You know, she never came out and said what she thinks. Of course, I didn't give her much of a chance. I was at Butler's house when the ambulance took his wife away, so my knowledge is firsthand.
And you think it was suicide?
Well, that or accidental death. I'd say the latter. Silas Butler would prefer that. Mrs. Butler was stretched out on the garage floor.
Which means she got out of the car to reopen the garage door. Why had it closed? That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it could have blown shut.
But all garage doors can be unlatched from the inside.
I know that, I know. I don't believe the door blew shut or that she tried to get out. Mrs. Butler, as you know from what my sisters told you, was an unhappy lady.
So the verdict is suicide.
Except for the fact that we found her on the floor. The explanation for that is that she closed the garage door, started the car in the dark, changed her mind, thought of escaping, then changed her mind again, and she took her life.
Well, did Mrs. Palmer tell you what she'd read in Mrs. Butler's diary?
Well, I've glanced through it.
Well, she was afraid of the parallel between her life and his murder story.
Well, if he's a writer, he'd spill out some of his own life in what he writes. Isn't that how writers work?
Well, sure, but what's funny is how Mr. Butler struggled to find the right ending for his murder mystery. It's all here, Captain.
What's that?
My critique of his work. Mr. Butler and I exchanged a lot of thoughts about how to end his story.
Would you explain that, please?
Well, everyone who reads knows the old devices employed in ending a murder mystery.
Mm-hmm.
The butler did it, or the poison pill taken by mistake, mushroom soup, or that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
All known and stale. Now, I'm referring to premeditated murder.
I understand, I understand. And your critiques?
Well, Mr. Butler thought that a suggestion of mine about using carbon monoxide had merit.
I see. And you're feeling guilt because you made the suggestion.
I don't know how I feel, but it certainly is odd that carbon monoxide is what caused the death. Well, that's the poison he decided to use, and I suggested it.
Well, did he indicate how he planned to use it?
No, I didn't either.
Yeah, it's a deadly poison, of course, and people are careless about it. You know, we have accidental deaths all the time because a person starts up his car with the garage doors closed or only partly open. You know, that gas works fast. I don't see anything sinister in Mrs. Butler's death.
Well, I'm glad you don't. It makes me feel better.
You know, my sister seems to think that Mrs. Butler's death wasn't suicide or accidental death. You know it's left.
Yes.
And that's a very serious implication.
I know it. And I hope she's wrong.
Look, leave your critique, huh? I'll see if I can make a match-up between your suggestions and what happened. But I don't like it. I know Silas Butler. I don't think he'd commit murder.
Good heavens, George. You seriously think that Mr. Butler used you to help him plan a murder?
Well, I know it sounds weird.
Oh, it's unbelievable. He'd have to be mad.
We don't know what really happened, but Captain Zachary is going to investigate again.
Well, what's there to investigate?
Well, little details.
Such as what?
Oh, I don't know. For instance, why was the garage door closed?
Well, because the poor woman trapped herself and was dead before she could get it open.
But that doesn't make sense. A person doesn't go into a garage to get a car and close the garage door before the car is backed out.
Well, not unless the person wants to take his own life. But it's obvious. That's why the report was suicide.
But Mrs. Butler was found on the garage floor.
Well, you're just looking to make a mystery out of a simple tragedy, George.
Yeah, maybe.
Of course you are. Mrs. Butler went into the garage, purposely closed the garage door, and started up her car. How else could the garage door have been closed? Oh, will you and Mrs. Palmer next imagine that someone waved a magic wand and closed it?
We began with the power of the pen. Plato's Republic created Western civilization, and some of Leonardo's reflections led to the airplane. But murder by correspondence? Or are Mrs. Palmer and the writing instructor, George Monroe, imagining the idea when the evidence does not support it? We'll find out when I return with Act Two.
We got the whole week shopping done in 45 minutes.
And you know why? Because during the dinner hour, everybody's home. The stores
are empty.
Stores
empty, that's true. Look at this.
Somebody's broken in, that's what it is. Look at the china closets on its side.
Crime statistics show that most home break-ins occur during daylight hours, that they're frequently done by kids who cause as much vandalism as theft. Now you can get instant protection with the Ultrason X from Master Lock, the name that means security. It's an electronic burglar alarm that just plugs into any wall outlet, like a radio. Instant protection that costs less than you might think. It sends out ultrasonic waves that sense an intruder's movement and set off a loud alarm. And the Ultrason X can set off remote alarms, too, plugged in elsewhere in the house, or even next door. For the name of your nearest Master Lock alarm dealer, call this toll-free number, 800-528-6050. Right now, call 800-528-6050.
Think about it.
Is your fire extinguisher within easy reach, and do you really know how to use it? Last year, over 2.5 million kitchen fire victims wished they had thought about it. Unfortunately, many small fires that start here in the kitchen turn into devastating blazes. Underwriters Laboratories field engineer Ray McNabb says that's because people try to fight kitchen fires with water.
Cooking fires caused by fat, oil, or grease should be smothered, not soaked.
The best way to smother a fire is with a fire extinguisher. Only problem is, most folks hide their extinguishers.
They serve no purpose hidden in a closet or in an area where a fire may start, like above a stove. Place it where you can see it and grab it.
Remember, get everyone outside, call the fire department, start your extinguisher, and
aim the nozzle at the base of the fire, sweeping from side to side, and watch out for a reflash.
Think about it. A public service from UL and this station.
Mr. Longfellow said once that what a writer asks of his reader is not so much to like as to listen. That applies here. Silas Butler wanted his correspondence school instructor, George Monroe, to listen to his ideas for a murder mystery story. George did, and supplied him with a device, the use of carbon monoxide as the poison. Then Mrs. Butler died from carbon monoxide poisoning. But her best friend, Judith Palmer, is not content with the explanation of suicide or accidental death. It is the evening of the day after the tragedy.
Judith, my dear, I know Silas Butler. He's both a client and a friend, and I can't conceive of him or anyone writing a story of premeditated murder and then acting on it in life. All right, what does the writing instructor say?
Well, he's puzzled because it was he who suggested carbon monoxide.
I see. Then if he's a writing expert, have him figure out how it was done. I don't think he can, because the police are satisfied that Molly's death was, well, because you prefer it, an accident.
Why do you say I prefer it, Ken?
You said so before. You can't imagine Molly taking her own life. Well, I can. She hasn't been a happy person since her son was killed.
By his father?
Oh, Judith, dear, please, don't say such a thing. Silas was speeding and he and the boy had a serious accident. It does happen, you know. Silas loved his son. You simply must not say that he killed him. That's unfair.
Well, perhaps. But you know what their lives have been like since it happened. He was very depressed when I saw him around noon.
Yeah. Well, I told him I'd stop by later this evening to discuss the funeral and other details.
Oh, Kent, what will happen to him now?
I'll find out. He's all alone.
Yes, all alone. No accusing eye on him. Molly always looked at him that way.
Silas Butler is not a criminal.
Molly thought he was. Once.
Oh, Kent. Come in.
How are you, Silas?
All right.
You alone?
Yes. Family arrives tomorrow. Molly's relatives. I've only got my mother. Let's sit down.
You sure you're all right?
Oh, yes, yes. I'm still stunned. This will hit me later on all its reality. Thanks for coming over. Judith stopped in about noon and took charge of Molly's things. I'm grateful to her.
Ah, she's grief-stricken. Do you feel up to talking?
Yes.
What about you, Sanderson?
I don't know. Sell the house, of course. I can't go on living here. Ever since that automobile accident, life's held nothing for me. Molly never recovered from the loss of our son. All that sustained her was her loathing for me. I'll always see her accusing eyes.
Oh, now, Silas, you'll forget that in time.
I hope so. It was an accident. I'm to blame for that, but do you think I wanted to have my son killed? I'd rather have died myself. I wish I had.
I know.
Why last night?
Pardon?
Why did Molly choose last night to leave the house and have this accident?
I can't answer that. She'd been going into long periods of depression. I don't know why she went out. She often did that at night.
Just to escape?
Yes. She didn't want to be with me.
Well, did she object to our chess game?
I don't see why she should have. Playing chess is a better way to spend an evening than most other ways. You thrashed me last night.
Moving your knight to Queen Bishop 3 was a mistake, you know.
Yes, I guess it was.
Well, you didn't think so at the time. You got up and walked over to the library window.
I did? I forgot.
Yes, you did. I wondered at the time why you left the chessboard, and I asked you. Don't you remember what you said?
I can't say that I do.
Well, you said it was checkmate and that the game was over. Even though I had a rook bearing down on your knight. Still, you moseyed over to the window with an air as if you'd won the game. You do remember that, of course.
Sort of, yes.
Yeah, and then you looked out the window.
What's that mean, Kent?
Well, that was only a minute after Molly left the house. Isn't that right?
Yes, I think it is. Why?
Well, the library windows command a clear view of the garage at the end of your driveway.
Yes.
Was the garage door open?
I don't think it was. If I thought anything, I'd have figured that Molly had already left. Why?
Well, we should have investigated.
How could we have anticipated any trouble? I've never given much thought to whether or not the garage door was up or down. Why should I have? Do you?
No. Well, you got a point. Mine is that by the time I checkmated you, Molly was in the garage, dead.
That means, Kent, you've got your doubts, too.
It means no such thing, Judith. I just tried to reconstruct the scene, that's all.
All right. Silas got up from a chess game. He was about to lose and walked over to the window. Now, that doesn't make sense. That's not the way chess players behave, is it? Of course it isn't. Cy went to that window in order to get a view of the garage. Now, darling, is there anything else you remember?
No. Your imagination is beginning to run away again, Judith. I suggest that we leave any further investigation to Zach and his police department. Huh?
Well, I hope we've aroused his suspicions.
We? You and who else?
George Monroe. Zach telephoned me while you were out. Mr. Monroe called on him and gave him the critiques of Silas's writing. Zach thought they were interesting. He thought Silas had written a pretty good mystery story.
Well?
And Mr. Monroe thought that Molly's death ought to be reinvestigated.
Oh, no, no. Molly hasn't even been buried, and you and Monroe want to subject Cy to more suffering? I don't like that at all. I really don't. I didn't visit Cy tonight with doubts in my mind.
Well, you asked him why he went to the window.
No, I only mentioned that he had gotten up from the chess game and gone to the window, that's all.
Why? That was odd, wasn't it?
I wouldn't say that. Cy is a harried man. Chess gets his mind off his unhappiness. I simply wondered why it was last night of all nights that Molly chose to have an accident.
Well, maybe Cy had just figured out how to commit the murder in his story.
I doubt that he would have shared such an idea with his wife.
Well, you never know. You ought to read Molly's diary.
I'm not going to. And frankly, I've had enough of this. You and Zach pursue it. I'm really tired of it. So if you'll excuse me, I think I'll turn in.
All right. Oh, is our car in the garage or in the driveway?
I left it out. Why?
Well, if he's still awake, I may drive over and talk with George Monroe. Oh, Mr. Monroe, I know it's late.
Well, that's all right, Mrs. Palmer. It's not that late. It's only 10:30. Oh, I'm never in bed before midnight. Please sit down.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I understand you saw my brother, Captain Zachary. You know, he was impressed, both by Mr. Butler's writing and by your critiques.
Well, thank you. From what I had criticized about Mr. Butler's story, I could easily reconstruct it. The story does parallel his life with Mrs. Butler.
Yes.
Now, I paid special attention to his struggle, with my help, to find a way of using carbon monoxide as a poison without the police being able to detect it.
Did you reach any conclusion?
No. And yes. No about the device, the novel idea of killing with a gas, but
Yes, about your suspicions.
Oh?
In Mr. Butler's story, the man becomes bitter and abusive because the wife withdraws from him and silently accuses him of the death of the son.
Yes, exactly what happened between Cy and Molly Butler.
Well, furthermore, there were introspective passages in which the man dreamed of being free from the wife's accusing eye.
Oh.
That's when he began to think about murder. The wife sensed it, but she couldn't do anything about it. It was as if she were mesmerized.
Well, it fits, doesn't it?
It seems so. What strikes me is the psychology of the thing. Was he guilty of the boy's death?
Through negligence. It wasn't deliberate.
And Mrs. Butler never overcame her loss?
No.
Well, as you said, it fits.
But how do we prove it?
Well, Captain Zachary is reinvestigating.
Oh, it needs more than police investigation. It requires some kind of creative inspiration.
How it was done.
That's right. How could it have been done? Cy Butler and my husband were playing chess in the Butler's library. Toward the conclusion of their first game, when my husband had him on the defensive, Mr. Butler rose and walked to the window.
Did he? And he thought he was losing the game?
That seemed odd to me, and I mentioned it to my husband.
What did Mr. Butler do at the window?
I don't know. Looked out. It commands a clear view of the detached garage. But now, what could he have done from the library window that would have had any connection with Molly's death?
Oh, darned if I can imagine.
Oh, I wish you'd try, Mr. Monroe. You are a creative man.
Well, I know, but Butler and I both struggled to invent a gimmick for killing a person with carbon monoxide poison without being detected. We hadn't succeeded.
Well, he may have.
Yes. I wonder what it could be. Assuming we're not crazy. It's a puzzler.
Oh. What are you thinking about?
Hmm.
You've got an abstracted expression on your face.
Something Mother said earlier this evening.
Oh?
Now, what was it? I'd explained your interest in this fantastic notion. Mother agreed that if Mrs. Butler didn't commit suicide, then her death must have been accidental because she couldn't get out of the garage.
Yes, go on.
But the idea of murder was nonsense. She wondered. Yes, here's what she wondered. She said, you and Mrs. Palmer next imagined that someone waved a magic wand and closed it. Meaning, of course, the garage door.
Waved a magic wand?
It stuck in my head, and I've given it some thought.
Well, Mr. Butler did go to the window soon after Molly left the house.
But what kind of magic wand could he have waved?
Think about it. Think about it, Mr. Monroe. I will, too. What your mother said might be the very clue we're searching for.
Judith Palmer has known Silas Butler for many years, and she knows him as a rather insolent man. We don't know that. With his friend, Kent Palmer, he seemed to be like any man suffering from a grievous loss. But according to what he has written and from what we have learned from his wife's diary, Mr. Butler might be capable of committing a major crime. How is the question? I'll return shortly with Act Three.
Do you have a taste for things that are a little out of the ordinary?
Look, Doris, it has a clock in its stomach and it glows in the dark.
I think we should snap it up, Dick.
Do you like things that are fun but are also functional?
Look, Dick, this is fun.
Uh-huh, but is it functional, Doris?
Do you want to be the talk of the town?
Oh, Dick and Doris, we were just talking about you.
Then the Opel Isuzu is your kind of car. It's not ordinary, it's fun but functional, and people will talk about it.
Did you hear what Dick and Doris bought?
The Opel Isuzu, a dandy new small car. At your Buick Opel dealers.
Oh, will it be, Bill Soda? Shaving cream or prescription?
It's my hemorrhoids, Mr. Edwards. Pain. Itching.
Well, most of my customers use this.
Preparation H?
Well, in many cases, Preparation H relieves occasional pain and itch for hours.
Yeah, that's great.
And Preparation H actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissues caused by inflammation.
I'll buy that.
Doctor-tested Preparation H comes in ointment or suppositories, soothes pain and itch, and actually helps shrink swelling of hemorrhoidal tissue. Now use only as directed.
The most important people since people first began are children, 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 for the child is father of the man.
belong to UNICEF. The Tucson Boys Choir gave their talents. To learn what you can give, call your local UNICEF committee or write UNICEF, United Nations, New York.
The child is father of the land.
Drive me crazy, and I wish you were dead, are two commonplace expressions that a wildly angry person has been known to use. They're not meant to be taken literally. They sum up a condition that is unbearable and a wish to be realized. Apologies usually follow. Both sentences, however, seem to apply to Silas Butler. His wife's silent accusation was driving him mad, and he may have wished her dead. It's the next morning. George Monroe again is seated opposite Captain Zachary of the police department.
Good morning, Captain.
Good morning. My sister telephoned that she'd seen you again.
Yes, were my critiques helpful?
Yeah, very. You know, Butler writes well. That's a sad story he tells.
You can understand from the character in the story that he would commit murder.
Yeah, well, maybe. You know, you never know about a murderer. Most murders just occur. A person loses his temper, goes crazy. But a premeditated murder, well, that's pretty rare.
Well, I agree. As a writer, it comes down to motive. In his story, Mr. Butler's character does have motive.
Yeah.
May I make a couple of suggestions?
Sure, go ahead.
But talk to Mr. Kent and to Mr. Butler, and ask them to recall everything they can about their chess game.
You mean about Butler walking to the library window? My sister mentioned that. Anything else?
But take another look at the diary. There may be a clue there.
Why? You think she may have anticipated her death?
She might have.
Hmm. Anything else?
Well, it's this foolish idea I have because my mother said something about waving a magic wand.
Uh-huh.
There could be something to it.
Yeah, sure. If we can find the magic wand. Any ideas?
Offhand, no, but would it be improper of you to ask Mr. Butler if he'd had any repairs made recently to his house?
Such as what?
I don't know, but if I wanted to trap someone in a garage with an engine running, I might dream up some gadget that would close the garage.
Uh-huh, I see. Well, you know, a lot of homes have posts by their driveways. You stop your car, push a button, the garage door opens or closes.
Yes, that's the kind of thing I mean.
And if the garage has a button which does the same thing, it opens or closes the garage.
Do you know if the Butlers had that kind of device?
Yeah, but I'll find out when I examine the garage. That's a good suggestion, Mr. Monroe. That is, if we're going to pursue the murder idea.
Well, don't you see any validity to it?
It's possible, but don't be disappointed if our original verdict holds. Mrs. Butler killed herself, or she died accidentally.
Oh, Zach. Come on in.
No, let's stay out here, huh? Well, how are you, Si?
Still dazed, but having the family around helps. Molly's relatives arrived an hour ago.
When's the funeral?
Tomorrow at 11. Anything special you wanted to see me about, Zach?
No. Just wanted to ask if I could look around the property.
Of course. The garage?
Yeah, I'd like to, you know, look it over. You don't mind?
No, feel free. It's closed. Punch the button on the side of the door, on the upright.
Oh, you've got one of those, huh? An electrically operated door.
Yes. It's very, very convenient. Well, what's your interest, Zach?
Oh, just satisfying myself. You know, my sister was Molly's best friend.
And she can't believe what happened. Neither can I, any of us. You've given your verdict, Zach. I don't understand why.
Well, assuming that Molly did not commit suicide.
I don't want to believe that either. I prefer to believe it was an accident. She had gotten out of the car. We found her on the floor.
Yeah, well, what bothers me, Si, is why she couldn't have gotten out of the garage.
Carbon monoxide can poison in a minute and a half.
You know that for a fact?
Well, yes. I've done some research for a story I've been writing. I take a correspondence course.
Oh, it was something to do. No, that's true about the poison, you know. In 6 minutes, a person is dead.
Uh-huh. So there's Molly sitting behind the wheel of the car with the engine running and the garage door closed. See, what I can't explain is why she didn't shut off the motor and get out of the garage.
Well, neither can I. But what's even more strange is why she was at the wheel and the garage door was closed.
Yeah, that is mighty strange. Could the garage door have come down by itself?
I don't know. I suppose so. You know these gadgets. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't.
Yeah. Is there a switch inside the garage for raising or lowering the doors?
Well, sure, but what if it didn't work?
Any other way of getting out of the garage?
Well, there's a regular door on the side of the garage toward the back. We kept it locked against prowlers.
Okay, I'll look around again. I said the other night how sorry I was about Molly. I'm just as sorry for you.
But why in the world do you want to know the name of the butler's carpenter?
Or electrician, Judy. Either one.
Well, it may be mentioned in Molly's diary. You returned it to me. Let me look. Zach, you're being very mysterious.
Well, you want me to reinvestigate the death? Well, this is part of it. The garage is electrically controlled.
Of course, now I remember. It was modernized about 2 months ago. Well, what does that have to... Oh, here it is. Yes, Mr. Day did the work. Molly writes here that he'd installed an overhead door and... Yes, it works by electricity.
Uh-huh.
Push a button and it operates. And there's another switch on a post at the entrance to the driveway. Or there was.
They had it removed.
Yes, it was an attractive nuisance. Children used to punch the button just for fun. The door was always going up and down. Mr. Day was the carpenter. Why, Zach, what's so intriguing about the butler's garage door?
Well, there's another way to open an electrically operated garage door. You don't have to punch a button.
Oh?
You can use a hand switch. You know, like that gadget for switching TV channels?
I didn't know that.
Butler left the chess table and walked over to the window.
Yes?
Which commanded a view of the garage.
Yes.
Where he could have seen Molly enter the garage. Don't jump to conclusions, Judy. I think we've got it, but I want to be sure. Now, when Silas returned to the chess table, did he have anything in his hand?
Kent didn't say. Oh, you mean he was carrying one of those remote control gadgets?
Exactly. I better talk with Kent.
I'll telephone.
No. Face to face. Silas is his friend, and this is a touchy subject. Silas and Monroe are trying to figure out how to commit murder with carbon monoxide. I think Silas came up with the answer.
Now, what's up, Zach?
Oh, more of the same, Kent.
Your suspicion that Cy Butler is a criminal.
Hmm? Yeah, he may be, Kent.
You seriously think that? Because of the story he wrote?
Well, if it hadn't been for the diary and the correspondence school critiques, he might have gotten away with it.
You mean he did do it? But how?
Well, I don't exactly know yet. Tell me, when Butler walked to the library window, he was in bad shape in the chess game, right?
Yes, I found it odd that he did.
Oh, now, tell me about his walking back. Just try to think back, huh? Try to remember exactly what he did.
When he got up, he had a pawn in his hand. One of mine. He captured it with his knight. He kind of rolled it around his hand, and I wondered why he had left the table, so I glanced after him. He placed the pawn in his jacket pocket.
Uh-huh. And when he returned to the table?
Well, nothing.
Well, didn't he place the pawn behind the board?
Yes. After he sat down, I heard it.
You heard his pawn?
Well, I mean, it clinked in his pocket against his cigarette lighter.
Oh, a wooden pawn against a lighter?
No. A metal pawn. I didn't like Cy's chess set because it was made of metal alloy, and the pieces were quite dramatic, but I prefer the traditional wooden ones.
Mm-hmm. Well, what did he do?
I told him not to squirrel away the pawn. And he said, he took it out.
With the lighter?
No. That's funny. When we set up for the next game, he asked me for a light.
Oh, then what he had in his pocket wasn't his lighter.
Well, come to think of it, no. It is funny. But I remember the clinking sound.
I think the carpenter or the electrician can tell me what it was he had in his pocket. I may need you later in the day, Kent.
All right. You've given me a bad turn, Zach.
Uh-huh. It's nothing compared to the one Silas gave Molly.
Now, what's this urgent business all about, Zach? Hello, Kent. Judith.
Hello, Si.
Close the door, would you, Kent?
And who is this? George Monroe, Mr. Butler. I'm very sorry about what happened. Thank you. Well, Zach, now why did you ask me to come down to the police station?
Because what I'm about to say is better said here than in a house of mourning.
What is it you have to say?
You murdered Molly Butler.
I murdered my wife. Anything else?
Isn't that enough?
I suppose I have you to thank for this preposterous charade.
I'll take some of the credit. Give the rest to Molly's diary and to this young man here.
Monroe?
Yes, George Monroe. You wrote a murder mystery, didn't you? Or half wrote one, I should say. What you and Monroe hadn't figured out was just how a person could be killed from carbon monoxide poisoning without being caught. Isn't that true?
Go on. You seem to know that.
Monroe couldn't figure it out, but you could. The idea came to you after Mr. Day remodeled your garage. He installed overhead sliding doors which can be opened and closed by touching a switch.
Certainly. Where's the mystery?
Well, Day also supplied you with remote control switches. You hold the switch in your hand, press a button, and the door goes up or comes down. And that's how you close the garage door with Molly seated behind a running engine.
Oh, Zach, that's preposterous.
No, it isn't. Not for a rejected man.
You came to hate Molly.
Because she hated me.
And you murdered her. You closed the garage door.
She could have opened the door by pressing the button on the inside.
Not if you held down the close button and neutralized her switch. And that's what you did. Kent, how long was he at that window?
3 or 4 minutes.
Yeah, more than enough time for Molly to become dazed, and then she panicked. And from the story you were writing, she knew you planned her murder, and there she was with you carrying out your plan. She was between the back of the car and the garage door praying that the switch would work. And it didn't, because you had neutralized it. And even then, she must have tried to turn off the car engine because we found her on the floor next to the front door.
Kent's my lawyer.
When you took the porn out of your jacket pocket, it clicked against something.
Yes, my lighter.
Then why didn't you use it to light your cigarette instead of borrowing a match from me?
Because you didn't have your lighter, Si. That pawn clicked against your remote control gadget. And let's not overlook the garage side door. You had locked it. And don't repeat that the door was never used. It was used all the time because it opened in on Molly's garden supplies.
Anything more?
Molly didn't have the remote control switch with her. Had you told her it had been mislaid?
You can't prove...
Oh, yes, I can. Yes, I can, Si. Your own story. Your talks with Mr. Day about the use of the hand remote switch and Molly's diary. We'll find both switches and, I imagine, the key to the regular door. Si, you're under arrest for premeditated murder.
Perhaps you guessed just how Silas Butler almost got away with murder. But what a strange way for him to get caught. A piece of writing undid him. That and Mrs. Palmer's evaluation of the characters of Silas and his wife. And although Butler, in his way, was a tragic figure, murder is an intolerable offense. Confronted with the evidence against him, he made a full confession. I shall be back shortly.
I want that sinus medicine.
A headache tablet?
No. The sinus medicine that relieves headache and congestion, internal sinus pressure, and post-nasal drip.
You mean Sinoff.
Exactly.
Compare Sinoff to any other sinus tablet. You'll find no sinus tablet you can buy relieves more symptoms. When you take Sinoff tablets, you get a full dose of pure aspirin plus a powerful sinus drainer to help sinus pain while you drain. And for the fastest known form of sinus congestion relief, there's Sinoff Sinus Spray. S-I-N-E-O-F-F. Sinoff. Take when needed, only as directed. Always insist on Sinoff.
The sinus medicine that relieves headache and congestion, internal sinus pressure, and post-nasal drip.
You mean Sinoff tablets.
Exactly. Sinoff, the sinus medicines in the bright red box. S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Now that he's won it, what's he going to do with it? In this week's special election issue of Time magazine, Jimmy Carter reveals his plans for his presidency. In an exclusive interview, the president-elect tells you what he wants to do about your taxes, how he's going to change your government, and how he personally plans to deal with foreign heads of state. It's a revealing study of what's really on James Earl Carter's mind. In another Time interview, Carter's campaign manager spells out how they won it, why they almost lost it, and what he sees as Jimmy's campaign's strengths and weaknesses. You'll discover the biggest single factor in the Carter victory. Find out where Carter might run into trouble with the new Congress and meet the new members of the Senate and House. You'll also look into the future of Gerry Ford, Bob Dole, Ronald Reagan, and the grand old party itself. The election and what to expect next in the new issue of Time on newsstands now. Pick up a copy today.
Full circle with the quote about the pen being mightier than the sword. A correspondence student finally completed his murder mystery, which was his plan for a real-life murder. A diary, an imaginative young instructor, and careful police investigation combined to rob Silas Butler of his perfect murder and of his life. Our cast included Bob Caliban, Ralph Bell, Joan Shea, and Joe Silver. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Sinoff, the sinus medicines. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Listening to KIXI Seattle, it's 11 o'clock at news time from CBS.
CBS News. The British chairman of the Geneva Conference on the Future of Rhodesia has scheduled separate behind-the-scenes meetings with the various delegations on Sunday in a further attempt to get the conference off dead center. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Ambassador Ivor Richard plans meetings with the Rhodesian white government delegation and those of the four black nationalist factions, hoping he can narrow the wide breach between them. Richard hopes he can make enough progress on Sunday to make possible a full formal session of the conference on Monday. But there are increasingly acrimonious words being heard. A leader of one of the black delegations says that only through guerrilla warfare can black majority rule be accomplished, In Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, yesterday, the presidents of the five so-called frontline states bordering Rhodesia met to discuss the situation and issued a strongly worded statement also backing a guerrilla war. The Congressman Charles Diggs, visiting Geneva, said if the talks show progress, the incoming Carter administration will support them. CBS News continues following this message.
So much to say, so much to do, so many things to know. Got a feeling inside of me, looking for somewhere to go.
No matter where you live, there's probably a 4-H group near you. To find out more about 4-H, contact your local extension office.
4-H gives you room to grow.
You hear a lot of talk these days about the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, about how much energy slowing down will save, and about how many lives can be saved, too. I really can't argue with that. You can't get around this, either. The 55-mile-an-hour speed limit isn't just a good idea. It's the law.
A public service of this station, the U.S. Department of Transportation, and the Advertising Council.
Two key Chrysler Corporation production plants reopened late Saturday. Some 4,000 workers who had staged a wildcat strike despite agreement on a new national contract for Chrysler workers returned to the Trenton, Michigan engine plant and the Twinsburg, Ohio stamping plant. In Detroit, United Auto Workers and company negotiators met through most of the day but failed to work out contract details for Chrysler's 9,000 salaried workers. The strike deadline for the white-collar workers has been extended indefinitely. The Vietnam War is a thing of the past, but its memory lingers in conferences such as one held in the Boston area Saturday. Details from Larry Barr of CBS radio station WEEI in Boston.
Amnesty, the problems of the Vietnam veteran, and the reconstruction of Vietnam dominated the conference, and participants like anti-war activist Cora Weiss and Fritz Efaw stressed that conferences such as these are necessary reminders that those problems still exist. Efaw spent 7 years abroad rather than fight in Vietnam. This summer, he risked jail to return home to attend the Democratic National Convention, where he was nominated for vice president. He believes that Jimmy Carter's election offers men like him the first chance for a fair amnesty.
I'm hopeful that he'll give sufficient attention to the issue and not do what President Ford did, which is to get into office, slap together a program very hastily that not only was ill-conceived, full of flaws, but just that didn't work, and which his own clemency board admitted didn't work.
Efaw is also hoping that a Carter amnesty plan will go into effect during his first week in office. Larry Barr for CBS News, Cambridge, Massachusetts.
The U.S. Coast Guard, San Francisco City firemen, and firemen from the Presidio Army Base combined Saturday night to rescue 44 people from a 60-foot fishing boat that ran aground on rocks under the Golden Gate Bridge. High winds, strong currents, and fog made the rescue difficult, but helicopters, boats, and a breeches buoy line run out to the boat from the shore combined to bring them to safety. Only one slight injury was reported. Now this.
When nature is acting up like this, you'd better stay like this. So you can quickly and calmly go about the business of protecting your home and family. But without a plan, when you're suddenly surrounded by this, it's all too easy to get lost in the confusion. A lot of wasted, misdirected efforts that do no one any good. At the American Red Cross, we've had a lot of experience keeping our heads in emergencies. And we'd like to pass on to you some of the things we've learned over the years. So, just in case you should find yourself caught up in this, you'll be able to stay like this. Call your local Red Cross chapter today. We've learned that hurricanes, floods, and tornadoes are serious enough not to get excited about.
Authorities in different parts of the world reportedly have seized quantities of nerve gas, indicating criminal or terrorist organizations may resort to use of such weapons. The Boston Globe reports in Sunday editions that more than a quart of a nerve gas called Tabun was seized in Vienna last February, and that vials of the gas had been offered for sale to Mideast terrorists. Officials are greatly concerned because of government support for some terrorist organizations. The Globe quotes Ambassador Douglas Heck, chairman of a government anti-terrorism group, is saying Libya is aiding, abetting, and providing sanctuary to a number of terrorist movements. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
KIXI time is 11:06.